I'm John Strum, and this is Real Talk MS. It's January 10th, and we have a lot to talk about. In last week's episode of Real Talk MS, we talked with Professor Tanya Kuhlman about a new framework for researching, diagnosing, and treating MS that was proposed by the International Advisory Committee on Clinical Trials in Multiple Sclerosis. And if you happen to have the free Real Talk MS app installed on your smartphone or tablet, you'll find a copy of Professor Kuhlman's paper that defines this new framework and makes the case for adopting this new framework under the bonus content tab. I see this proposed framework as the next evolutionary step in diagnosing and treating MS. It takes into consideration all that's been learned about MS and all that scientists and clinicians continue to learn about MS. And it's going to impact the way that MS is treated, improving it in ways that we've seen scientific discovery improve treatment of other chronic conditions. Joining me to talk about how this proposed framework will impact people who are living with MS is the National MS Society's Chief Advocacy, Services, and Science Officer, Dr. Tim Cutsey. But before we get to my conversation with Dr. Cutsey, there are a few other things that you should know about. The new year brings with it no shortage of well-intentioned resolutions to get in better shape, to work out more regularly, and, of course, to start that diet. And if you scan social media posts, you quickly realize that the subject of diet is a year-round topic of interest for many people who are living with MS. Now, those posts seem to divide themselves into two categories. There are the people living with MS who are looking for the quote-unquote MS diet, and there are the people living with MS who claim that they've found that quote-unquote MS diet. So last year, the National MS Society's Nutrition Wellness Subgroup, now this is a team of experts who study lifestyle factors in MS, they analyzed 16 separate studies that evaluated the impact of different diets on MS and concluded that there is no one-size-fits-all MS diet. The group pointed out that there were specific features of specific diets that could be important. For example, a study on salt intake among people living with MS found that people with a high-salt diet experienced more relapses than people on a low-salt diet. The study also showed that people on a low-salt diet also experienced improvement in some of their MS symptoms. The Nutrition Wellness Subgroup also pointed out that since obesity has been shown to be a risk factor in developing MS and to also speed MS progression, avoiding a high-fat diet probably makes sense. I think it's important to point out that in their analysis, the MS Society's Nutrition Wellness Subgroup wasn't minimizing the impact of diet on MS. As anyone gains weight, it becomes harder for them to move. If that person is also dealing with disability, that extra weight just makes it that much more difficult for them to move. So eating a healthy diet is going to help you stay at a healthy weight. And if you're moving better, you're feeling better about yourself. So that healthy diet affects both your physical and your emotional well-being. I think it's clear that there's a lot more to learn about diet and MS. For now, the Nutrition Wellness Subgroup recommends a diet low in processed foods and rich in a variety of fruits and vegetables, whole grains, and healthy sources of protein, like the diet recommended by the American Heart Association. We'll continue to watch this space as scientists continue to learn about the role that lifestyle factors play in living with MS. In the meantime, if you'd like to learn more about what scientists are discovering about the impact of diet on MS, well, you'll find a link in today's show notes. While we're talking about wellness, The National MS Society is offering a free virtual program devoted to the health and well-being of people affected by MS. The 2023 Pathways to Wellness in MS focuses on emotional, spiritual, and social wellness. During this program, you'll hear from experts on the current research in positive psychology, mood disorders, and stress management. You'll learn how connections to nature, religion, or mindfulness can positively impact your quality of life, and you'll become empowered to identify healthy relationships while learning strategies designed to strengthen your personal relationships at home, work, and in your community. Pathways to Wellness and MS takes place online from 1 to 4:30 p.m. Eastern Time on Thursday, February 9th. If you'd like to learn more or register for this free program, you'll find a link in today's show notes. Myelin is the fatty substance that covers and protects nerve fibers in the central nervous system. It helps to conduct their electrical signals more efficiently. And MS is a demyelinating disease, where inflammation attacks the myelin in our central nervous system, and this affects that nerve cell communication, causing a variety of different symptoms and disabilities to develop. So repairing the myelin that's been damaged by MS is the key to restoring that nerve cell communication and restoring the physical function that's been lost. In past episodes of Real Talk MS, we've talked about a number of research initiatives that are currently underway, all focused on remyelination. And last month, Frequency Therapeutics, a biotech company located in Lexington, Massachusetts, announced the formation of a clinical advisory board to guide their remyelination in multiple sclerosis project. The company has developed a small molecule that's designed to coax the myelin-producing cells in the central nervous system to produce more myelin. Now, typically in MS, inflammation, aging, and perhaps other factors keep those myelin-producing cells from operating at an optimal level. So, in theory, by removing those barriers or getting around those barriers, the body's own innate system of myelin production would be re-optimized and would return to doing its job. Frequency Therapeutics plans to begin its first clinical trial of this small molecule designed to jumpstart remyelination in the second half of 2023, and will keep you posted on their progress. If you'd like to review some of the details about Frequency Therapeutics' Remyelination and Multiple Sclerosis Project, you'll find a link in today's show notes. Myelin repair is certainly one of the developments that have motivated an international panel of MS experts to propose a new framework for researching, diagnosing, and treating MS. In a moment, the National MS Society's Chief Advocacy, Services, and Science Officer, Dr. Tim Cutsey, joins me to discuss how this framework will take us to the next level in MS patient care. About 8 weeks ago, an international panel of MS experts published a paper calling for a new framework for describing MS, diagnosing MS, and treating MS. As you might imagine, this is a big subject, and in last week's episode of Real Talk MS, we talked about the proposed framework with the author of that paper, Professor Tanya Kuhlman. Today, I'm happy to welcome the National MS Society's Chief Advocacy Services and Science Officer, Dr. Tim Cutsey, who's joining me to continue that conversation. Tim, welcome back to the podcast.
Well, hey, John, it's great to be back on the show with you.
As I just mentioned, last week, Professor Kuhlman shared some of her thoughts about this proposed framework with us. I'm hoping you'll start us off today by giving us your sense of what this proposed framework is all about. And I'll ask you one of the questions that I posed to Professor Kuhlman. Why is this panel of international experts recommending that we make a change from a system that's been in place for years?
That is a great and perceptive question. And so it might help your listeners to give you a sense of who is the International Advisory Committee on Clinical Trials in MS, and, you know, what is this group of experts? You know, basically, it is a group that was created by the National MS Society almost 40 years ago now, at the time when we didn't have any disease-modifying treatments, and there was a real hunger and a call for how do we do clinical trials? How do we organize and conduct those? And so that committee was created to help, you know, basically advise on how do we do clinical trials. That is, and this led to all of the disease-modifying treatments we have today in terms of how they're structured. And one of the key issues that arose as we were starting to think about how to do clinical trials in the late 80s, early 90s is how we describe MS. And at the time, if a person had gone to a doctor in, say, the early 1990s and was experiencing the symptoms of MS, getting diagnosed with MS, doctors would actually describe MS in a lot of different ways. Because, you know, some doctors would describe it one way, other doctors would describe it another way. And what the community quickly realized is that, you know, as we move into this era of new disease modifying treatments, we actually need to have more consistency in how we describe MS so that when a person is diagnosed, the doctor is able to say, here's the type of MS you have, here's what it's going to look like. And so the panel, you know, really took this on to say, you know, we need to be able to describe the disease in a way that makes sense to patients and doctors, and also that allows us to do clinical trials and make sure that we're recruiting people who have MS that, you know, potentially would be able to benefit and show us that this treatment does or doesn't work. And so that led to the creation of what we call the Loveland-Rheingold clinical course descriptors. It's a mouthful. It's basically the framework that many people with MS are familiar with today of relapsing remitting MS, secondary progressive MS, primary progressive MS. And that, you know, those served us really well for a very long time. But, you know, that was 1996. A lot has happened since 1996. And one of the things that has developed over the last, you know, 4 to 5 years in particular is a recognition that these descriptors, which were incredibly useful early on, did not get to the question of what's going on inside a person in terms of what's happening with their MS. It talked about, you know, they describe, you know, did a person have relapses? Yes, that's what they were seeing and they were experiencing in the doctor. They didn't get at, you know, what's happening inside a person's brain and spinal cord that's leading to the relapse. They didn't get at, you know, what's happening in the disease that's perhaps tied to progression that is affecting the person's journey. And there's been a steady call from the community to say, you know, we need a way of describing MS that goes beyond what a doctor sees when a person comes to them saying that, you know, I'm having difficulty walking, you know, that's a clinical symptom, to being able to get to the point of having a way of describing MS that where the doctor can say, you have MS, you're at this stage on the journey, and this is what's happening in your brain and spinal cord, and this is how we're going to treat it. It's a big vision. It's a and one that I think, you know, puts us with MS on a path to what your listeners might be familiar, for example, in when someone is perhaps facing cancer, and a person is, you know, their doctor says, you know, you have this cancer, you have a stage one, and we're going to treat you at stage one with these treatments, or you're a little further along and you're going to treat these treatments. We're not there yet. And that's what this paper is about. So we can come at, you know, get into that a little bit. But that's the context for the journey that brought us to today.
You know, today, people who are living with MS, as you pointed out, they've received a diagnosis of either relapsing, remitting, secondary progressive, primary progressive MS. Now, we hope when they receive that diagnosis, their neurologist went ahead and explained what their particular subtype of MS would mean in terms of their MS journey, their likely disease course. So they have, at the very least, a basic understanding of what all that means, what it looks and what it feels like. As we begin to look at MS and define it in terms of these biological mechanisms that may be at work, the things that are actually happening in that person's brain and spinal cord, where does that leave the person who's living with MS and their ability to understand the status of their MS?
So that's a really important question, because I think one of the things I would emphasize to your audience is that, you know, what this paper talked about is the need for us to find a new framework for describing MS that really reflected what was going on inside that person's brain. You know, things like, you know, they have inflammation that's happening over time that may come and go, or, you know, they may be losing nerve cells, because one of the things that we're learning is that, you know, the health of a brain cell depends, and nerve cells depends a lot on what I'll call as the battery packs of every cell, the mitochondria they're called. I'm sure if everybody has a phone, you know that when the battery dies, that's not a good thing. Well, that in MS, we're learning that the battery packs of nerve cells actually start becoming dysfunctional. And so those cells become dysfunctional and die, and people lose nerve cells. You know, all of these are the things that contribute to the disease that shows up in a person's, you know, progression, as the doctor may say, or they show up in losing nerve cells that contribute to how people think and the cognitive dimensions. And, you know, one of the aspects of this proposal is that we said we need to get at understanding all these different pathways so that we can then develop a framework that says, okay, along this stage of a person's journey, when they reach progressive MS, these are the things we see and understand are going awry, which may be different from where they are in an earlier part of a person's journey. And what doctors would like to get to is to be able to say, what can I treat at this point? What can I treat at the next point? What can I treat at a further part of the journey? And, you know, we're going to be in a, be in a period here where the way we talk about MS now in terms of relapsing MS, progressive MS, is going to be the way we have for, you know, a period of time, because, you know, those descriptors do serve a purpose of helping doctors and patients understand where they are in their journey. And the work that we're doing now is to say, when we build this framework, we are going to need to transition from our existing state to this future state, and help people sort of see, if a doctor says to you, you have secondary progressive MS today, what does that mean in this new framework? Where am I in that framework? Where do I see myself? And what does that mean for how the doctor is going to describe the disease I have? And importantly, which I think what your listeners will be asking for is, like, what does that mean for the treatments I can get at a different part of that journey? It also has a really, I'd say, very important implication for how we do research and how we develop treatments. Because one of the gaps we've had is, in terms of drug development, is having the ability to say, this treatment is focusing on this part of the disease during this phase of a person's disease journey. They've really been kind of broad spectrum. And when one starts getting specific about, let's say, you know, targeting the battery packs of the nervous system, well, you could actually begin to think about, you know, a treatment that goes right at that. And if we know that that is part of a person's disease process a little, say, maybe 10 years after they were diagnosed with MS, then the doctor actually starts to have tools that lets them treat MS in a precise manner, where they say, we're going to use this set of treatments at this point in the disease. If and when you get to here, this is the toolbox we'll have. And I realize that your listeners might be saying, that's an incredibly aspirational thing. Absolutely. And I think that's what we need to aspire to. The way we change the journey of MS, which is what I'm really passionately committed to, is by creating a world where, when we talk about modifying disease, we go beyond just sort of broad categories of, like, we're going to change the disease, to saying, we're going to address the demyelination, the loss of brain cells here. We're going to provide a treatment that rebuilds myelin here at this stage of the journey. But to do all of that, it does require a vision that says, here's what the disease looks like across the continuum, and then how we talk about it and describe it. So I think hopefully that's what gets at the question that your listeners want. I'm excited to describe it, because I think this is the future that we need to get to for MS.
If anyone knows just a few people who are living with MS, and most people who are living with MS do, they know that, gee, this person seems to have lots of relapses. This person I've never seen them have a relapse, or this person seems to be progressing faster, and yet they can all be categorized quite the same way. So I guess what I'm hearing as part of this conversation is this is going to really allow for personalized treatment, so that your MS, the exact things, as you put it, that are happening in your brain and spinal cord are the things that are going to be addressed, which may be different than the next person that neurologist sees in clinic that day.
Exactly. You know, and the way I describe it is that, you know, when we think about the nearly 1 million people who've heard the words, you have MS in the United States, that's 1 million unique individuals who have their own unique MS and who are on their own unique MS journey, some of whom may be further along than others. There may be some people, right, that by the time the show has aired, heard the day before the show aired that you have MS and they're listening to, or they might have lived with MS for 10 years. What we want to get to is, rather than saying here's how the MS population is categorized, it's what's, you know, one person, one doctor at a time, and what is happening in that person that the doctor can then address. And that's not to say that the existing state we have is somehow broken. I mean, having disease modifying treatments now almost 30 years, we can say that they have really changed and they've been transformative in terms of how MS is treated. The fact that we can diagnose MS quicker today, still not quickly enough for my taste and my concern. There still takes too long for some individuals. We have to address that as well. That, you know, we are in a strong starting point. But to your point, to get to, you know, what doctors want to be able to say is, the person in front of me, what's the toolbox I can have to address where they are in their disease journey? And this is what having a framework that is grounded in, you know, we know that, for example, one of the things we talk about in this paper is that, you know, the aging process, biological aging, really is an important consideration in MS. And, you know, one of the experts, as we were walking through the paper, said to us, you know, I've got a number of patients who I've seen for 15 years. And sometimes when I'm assessing, you know, what's happening in their MS, you know, the question I have is, are they walking slower because they're older or their MS? And, you know, this is one of those aspects that as we get older, our body doesn't heal as quickly. There's aspects that affect many things, but they could also be contributing and amplifying to what's going on in a person's progression. And what we talk about in this paper is that we need to be able to talk about and consider the fact that as the aging process takes effect, it also means that the brain doesn't heal as quickly, doesn't remyelinate as efficiently, you know, and there's this balance between age and the ability of the body to repair itself and heal itself. And, you know, all of these are factors that up until now, we've not really brought them in to the conversation. And what, and the vision from this, from the paper and the work we want to do is to say, now that we know the biology of what's going on, how do we then translate it into a set of tools that can guide the doctor-patient interaction, that can help people understand where am I on this journey, but that also can help the researchers who are looking to try to get new treatments also to focus in, let's target this aspect of the disease so that, you know, when we're designing a clinical trial, you can imagine, if I come back to the battery packs again, to say a clinical trial of a drug specifically focused on ensuring that nerve cells maintain the energy they need in order to have a healthy brain. That's not how we do clinical trials today, but that's the kind of future. And to get to that place, you need to have a very precise framework like we're talking about.
And when I first introduced our conversation today, I said this proposed framework is going to change the way we talk about MS, but it's certainly more far-reaching than how we talk about things. I can see a whole row of dominoes kind of tipping over and reinventing themselves as something a little more potent, a little more specific to each individual patient. But as you've mentioned, a clinical trial design is going to be reconsidered. Regulators like the FDA in the US and the EMA in Europe are going to reconsider how and what they're approving in terms of treatment and disease modifying therapies in the future. Clinicians are going to have these various toolboxes to be able to access and treat that patient with the specific kinds of treatments that are going to be best suited for them. That's a lot of change. Seems like a pretty heavy lift. So what do you see as the next steps in what sounds like a necessarily long process?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. And we're moving methodically because, you know, the way we describe MS, you know, affects a lot of people today. And we know that when, as you pointed out, a lot of change management needs to happen. You know, one of the challenges we face is the way we describe MS in the paper, if you don't mind my quoting, the phrase we use, it's deeply embedded in our healthcare system. And, you know, people with MS use these descriptors to help them understand what's happening in their MS. Doctors use them to, you know, make decisions. Regulators use them when they approve new drugs. Health insurers, you know, are using them to, you know, around that. So if you're going to change something that is so far reaching, the first step you need to understand is, now that we have the biology that we think needs to be incorporated, is how would you structure it? What would you ask the model to do? You know, if you were going to describe MS in different stages, what would be those stages? What would be the landmarks for those? And then importantly, you know, what's the science? You know, do you have the data to back up that if you believe this is how it should be organized, how the MS journey should look, you know, what does it look like? And then importantly, and you're helping us contribute to this, is what does this mean for people? What does this mean for when they go to the doctor? And then importantly, also, how do people who have lived with a descriptor today move into this new era and what it means for them and their in treatment and care? And I'd say what really motivates me around this is to ensure that, you know, people who live with MS, people who are partners to people living with MS, are able to know that we're paying attention to what's happening here and are able to navigate this journey. Because at the end of the day, it is about people affected by MS. The leaders of this committee, you know, it is all about, you know, better treatments, better care for people affected by MS, being able to bring the kinds of certainty that we're seeing in other diseases, the precision we're seeing in other diseases to MS. And we're at a place now. Why we can do this now is the investment in all of the research that we talk about in our Pathways to Cures roadmap is starting to bear fruit. We can look inside a brain and see a lot of what's going on in a person. We have the tools to monitor the disease activity like we never had before. And now it's our responsibility to say, in this environment, how do we evolve and adapt how we describe MS? We have to, because it's essential that we create a place where every interaction with a doctor, whether a person lived with MS 20 years or 2 days, can be guided by this framework.
You know, every week on this podcast, I try to talk about some of the exciting research going on. And at some point, someone has to ask the question, well, what are we doing with all these discoveries? What are we doing with all these new insights that we didn't have 5, 10, 15, 20 years ago? How can they make an impact today? And I think we're seeing that. What this really represents is leveraging all of the good science that's been done and continues to be done, and leveraging it in a way that's going to really make a profound difference in how that person with MS is going to be treated. I think that's beyond amazing.
Well, and I'll add, you know, you're so right. I mean, this is, for me, what having the privilege of working at the society and the role that I have, you know, there are so many people that have contributed to the science here. And by that, I mean, you know, we're not talking about laboratory, you know, type of work. You know, the ability to make the insights we had in the paper came because people living with MS participated in the research studies, participated in the clinical trials, participated in the work to be able to understand how to do MRI better, to give their blood samples, to participate in these biomarker studies that are so important for developing the test to monitor the disease. And we wouldn't be here without the participation of so many people for whom, you know, MS has defined their life. But by engaging and participating in the process, they are making a difference. we wouldn't be here without that. And I'm really grateful that so many people contributed over so long to this work. And really, it's going to set us up for an incredible future, I believe.
Well, Dr. Tim Cutsey, thank you for taking the time to help us understand what this new framework is about and how, at the end of the day, it's all about improving the quality, the level of care for everyone living with MS.
Thank you, John. It was great to be with you.
That's going to wrap up this episode of Real Talk MS. Real Talk MS is powered by the National MS Society. And you can share this episode of the podcast by letting your friends or family members know that all they have to do is point their web browser at realtalkms.com/280. You'll find that link in today's show notes, so you can easily copy and paste it right into an email or text. And if you have a minute, I hope you'll visit the Apple App Store or the Google Play Store and download the free Real Talk MS app for your iOS or Android smartphone or tablet. It's the best way for us to stay connected. The app will automatically download the latest episode of Real Talk MS. You'll be able to access any of our past episodes. You'll be able to save your favorite episodes. And it's a great way for me to share bonus content with you, like the paper proposing a new framework for researching, diagnosing, and treating MS that I shared with you today. The app is free, so I hope you'll download it today. I'm John Strum. Thanks for listening. Stay safe and make healthy choices.